Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Smashy Business Show. Today is September 6th, 2024. It is Friday. The weekend is upon us. My name is Hindal Dah, and I am here with my co-host, Abdulmajid Awan. For our main news stories today, we'll talk about local sodas beat Pepsi and Cola, Saudi Central Bank partners with Samsung to launch Samsung Pay, and 24 FinTech makes history as largest FinTech event debut. Before we get into any of that, however, let's go back to our good friend, Pavel Durov. We have talked about him a lot on the show, but we do have some updates from Pavel himself. So he has criticized the French authorities following his arrest last week on allegations of insufficient moderation on Telegram. And we have his statement open on he posted it on Telegram.
So it's the very first statement from Pavel Durov, the Russian billionaire, the Emirati citizen,
French citizen of St. Kitts and
Nevis. Yeah, so he's a citizen of multiple countries. This is the first time he's spoken after he was arrested on August 25. We saw a statement from Telegram earlier, which was a very short and cute statement that, oh, we abide by all the EU laws. But this time he has come up with a whole long list of reasons that the arrest was wrong. So first of all, thanks to everyone for your support and love. And last month I got interviewed by police for 4 days after arriving in Paris. I was told I may be personally responsible for other people's illegal use of Telegram because the French authorities didn't receive responses from Telegram. Mm. This was surprising for several reasons.
Let's talk about reason number one, which is Telegram has an official representative in the EU, the European Union, that accepts and replies to EU requests. Its email addresses has been publicly available for anyone in the EU who Googles Telegram EU address for law enforcement. Reason number two is the French authorities had numerous ways to reach me to request assistance. As a French citizen, I was a frequent guest at the French consulate in Dubai. A while ago, when asked, I personally helped them establish a hotline with Telegram to deal with the threat of terrorism in France.
Yeah, and this hotline thing is not new. They've also established a hotline with South Korea. We yesterday did a story where they said that there was a deep fake porn scandal in South Korea, which is growing very big, and the South Korean government itself got involved. So they created a hotline for them as well. So him saying that they've created a hotline for Telegram for threats in France, it's not news. So he goes on to list the third reason. If a country is unhappy with an internet service, the established practice is to start a legal action against the service itself. Here comes the interesting part. He says, using laws from the pre-smartphone era to charge a CEO with crimes committed by third parties on the platform he manages is a misguided approach. This was the whole highlight of the whole statement that he's put out. A lot of the parts of the statements, we know already the number of users and everything. But this part was especially significant because he blamed the third parties, right, not himself, not the platform. Mm-hmm. So it's like you make a knife and if someone uses it to murder, you're not going to like catch the maker of the knife.
The maker of the knife, yeah, exactly. You'll catch it's the perpetrator, yeah, exactly.
So moving on, he also said that no innovator will ever be able to build new tools if they know they can be personally held responsible for potential abuse of these tools. According to his logic, whatever logic he's provided in point number three, the maker of internet should be blamed for all this as well. Mm-hmm. Because he's like, any person who creates something, a product or a service, and if someone uses it for bad purposes, you can't catch the person. Mm-hmm. So establishing the right between balance between privacy and security is not easy. You have to reconcile privacy laws with the enforcement requirements and local laws with EU laws. He goes on to stipulate a lot of technical things now. And then he, in the end of this part, he says, yes, we stand by our principles of privacy. Obviously, our experience is shaped by our mission to protect our users in authoritarian regimes. But we've always been open to dialogue. Mm-hmm.
Let me continue with the Pavel statement. So he says, sometimes you can't agree with a country's regulator on the right balance between privacy and security. In those cases, we are ready to leave that country. We've done it many times. When Russia demanded that we hand over encryption keys to enable surveillance, we refused, and Telegram got banned in Russia. So just a short thing. So when that happened, Telegram actually wanted to move its headquarters or its operations to Berlin, but that didn't go through. So then after that, Telegram came to Dubai. So continuing on with the statement, when Iran demanded we block channels of peaceful protesters, we refused, and Telegram got banned in Iran. We are prepared to leave markets that are incompatible with our principles because we are not doing this for money. We are driven by the intention to bring good and defend the basic rights of people, particularly in places where these rights are violated. So he's very hell bent on
privacy.
Yeah, exactly.
I will not give the encryption keys or the data. Mm-hmm. I will leave the country.
Yeah.
So it's very good. It's
very. It shows how much power he has, actually.
And it shows that how much he understands the kind of support he has from mm-hmm. the people, from the users of Telegram. Yeah. It's not easy to say this that I'll leave France or I'll leave this country. He knows those countries, the users will create
back
a backlash.
Yeah.
And they will back him up.
Mm-hmm.
So very good. Very good from a tech founder that he believes in his users. Mm-hmm. And I guess the users also believe in him. So all of this does not mean Telegram is perfect. Even the fact that authorities could be confused by where to send requests is something that we should improve. This is a very sly tongue-in-cheek remark that the authorities knew that there's a hotline. They can always Google the helpline for Telegram to report anything. So this is a very cute tongue-in-cheek comment. I really loved how he phrased it, that even the fact that authorities could not be confused by where to send requests. Moving on, but the claims in some media that Telegram is some sort of anarchic paradise are absolutely untrue. We take down millions of harmful posts and channels every day. We publish daily transparency reports like this and this. He linked to them. We have direct hotline with NGOs to process urgent moderation requests further. And however, we hear voices, it's not enough. He says we have 950 million users. The growing user base is obviously growing the problems as well. It's not easy to moderate each and everything. There are a lot of metrics in place, but you can't always people always find a way to go through them.
Of course,
that's the funny part about these social media platforms, and that's why I made it a personal goal to ensure we significantly improve things in this regard. We've already started that process internally, and I will share more details on our progress with you very soon. I hope the events of August will result in making Telegram and the social networking industry as a whole safer and stronger. Thanks again for your love and memes.
It's very good that he put out this long statement explaining himself and also making it clear that Telegram isn't freely allowing, drug dealers or all sorts of violations on the channel. Like, they're actively trying to take those down. But like Majid said, it is not easy when we have such a large user base. So it's good that he put out a statement nonetheless.
And it's a very nicely worded statement. To be honest, you have to give credit. Maybe he, all this time that we were waiting from August 25.
He's just thinking up or writing the draft.
I guess this went through 100 million revisions before it was put out, because the investigation is formally underway. Whatever he says and does will be used against him in the court of law. You've seen this dialogue in a lot of crime dramas. So whatever he has said, this can be used against him, that he criticized French authorities, he criticized the French prosecutors or the law itself, because the law is nearly equal to the country. The constitution of a country is nearly equal to the country itself. So if he's criticizing all of this, he's basically criticizing French policies, French laws. So it's a very, very smartly worded statement. Funnily, Elon Musk, who when he was arrested on August 25, was commenting on nearly everything about First Amendment, about free speech. He's actually a backer of free speech. So he's a backer of Pavel.
I think he's Pavel's top supporter.
Right now,
he's the top voice for
Top
for
voice who
Pavel.
Is supporting Pavel Durov, because he again came with the same idea on X that it should be free speech. There was a tweet by an account on Twitter which says that Telegram silently changed one part in their terms of services. Mm-hmm. The terms of service was that whatever chat is happening between parties, two parties, three parties, or between the Telegram users, we do not participate in it, or we do not look at it. And Elon Musk, funnily, his style said interesting.
Interesting. But it's important to note that was misinformation. They only changed the like where the sentence was put. It was not. It was just removed from that place. Yeah. Yeah.
People will do anything to get likes, views, and everything. Engaging. So it's a big role of these big tech CEOs to moderate content. It's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
Pavel Durov, the likes of Elon Musk, the people who want free speech, who want people to come to their platforms and say whatever they want, obviously within some confines, not everything they want to say.
Of course, yeah.
But they have a big role to play in the future about the free speech world, about the free speech society that is being created through these platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see, hopefully more updates will come. Pavel Durov case is not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. So let's move on to our main story, second main story at this point. So local sodas in the Arab region rise as Coke and Pepsi face boycotts over Gaza genocide. So they're facing consumer boycotts, and they have been since October, the beginning of October, in several Muslim majority countries. So it's not only in the Arab region, but also in Pakistan, for example. Because of these companies' association with the U.S., which is perceived as a supporter of Israel, and also because of those companies' operations in occupied Palestine. So local brands like Egypt's V7, Pakistan's Cola Next, and Bangladesh's indigenous brands have surged in popularity as an alternative to Pepsi and Cola, and also other soda brands like Sprite, Miranda, Fanta, all those ones that we're familiar
all
with.
All of them are the derivatives of Pepsi and Cola eventually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, the boycotts have actually led to a notable decline in sales for Pepsi and Cola. And with Pepsi's growth stagnating and Coca-Cola's market share dropping in key markets.
And the boycotts reflect a broader geopolitical tensions. Obviously, what is happening in the Middle East, everyone is saying we've seen flight delays, we've seen flight cancellations to different countries. The economies in the Middle East, Lebanon is fighting with Israel. So that the Lebanon's economy is like on the verge. All of this is happening. And consumer activism, this is a very tricky word in today's world, because again, coming back to Gen Z, a lot of reports that you read online, they say that Gen Z is very active when it comes to all these things.
To social issues and politics.
Social issues, to politics. They're very aware. Obviously, all the platforms mm-hmm. make help a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They get all their information from social media.
Yeah. And I would say the biggest one would be TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a very a good platform for pro-Palestinian voices, because a lot of the pro-Palestinian voice, content weren't shadow banned or censored like Instagram, for example. And it had a wider reach over on a global scale. I mean, I remember people were talking about this on Twitter, like the U.S. is trying to ban TikTok because of the pro-Palestine content on there.
Yeah, there is a case between the U.S. The U.S. has told TikTok to basically either sell some of the, make it a U.S. enterprise, sell some of the shares to a U.S. enterprise, or leave the country.
Mm-hmm.
And U.S. People who are on TikTok, they hate the idea. Mm-hmm. It's still going on. There is no result on it. But some people say that
it was a
way of like pressurizing them. Mm-hmm. But they didn't get pressurized. Still, the conversation is happening, whether mm-hmm. it will happen or not. But what we've seen is the number I read was that one of the person who was interviewed in this news article, he belonged to a media buying and selling company, and he said that these local sodas catered to 2.5% of the market. That was a very low number, and a majority of the, like 95% plus shares mm-hmm. of the market were in Pepsi and Cola's favor. Different brands, but obviously under those two big umbrellas. And now they've grown up to be nearly 13% of the market. So it's not a small move. It's a very big move. It's nearly a double-digit mm-hmm. increase. So most probably, and all these brands, the Egypt's V7, it's going out into Middle East. The distribution is increasing. Mm-hmm. Pakistan's Cola Next, I know it like personally because I'm Pakistani, obviously. But Pakistani Cola Next is a very local brand. Mm-hmm. There's a bakery which created this brand when all of this was happening. They were in the market, but no one was buying them. But as soon as the boycotts happened, their sales rocket. And funnily, their prices also skyrocketed. Yeah. Uh-huh. So
yeah, in the UAE, we have soda, like local soda brands like Shani or Rani. Yeah. So they're not Coke alternatives, but still love very them. Good. They're amazing, yeah.
I've seen the local people, they love Shani.
Yeah.
I don't like it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The taste, I guess it's a little different from my taste palette.
It's an acquired taste.
Yeah, it's an acquired taste, but people love it here. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things that happens during Ramadan. Like people, like in Pakistan, we have a special drink for Ramadan. Every region has a special drink for Ramadan. Mm-hmm. And you guys also have it.
It's mainly Vimto, yeah.
It's Vimto.
Yeah. It's actually a Manchester brand. It's a brand from Manchester.
Oh, it's a brand from Manchester. Yeah. But people love it here.
Yeah.
So yeah, local sodas are taking over the market. Pepsi and Cola are trying a lot of innovative things that they can do, trying marketing strategies, pricing strategies, sales strategy, whatever they can do. I was actually looking at one of the events. They recently sponsored, Pepsi recently sponsored a startup incubator event. Actually, one of the princes in Saudi Arabia, one of the big royal family prince, he has a venture capital fund. I forgot the name completely, but he was there. He sponsored two startups there. Invested in them basically. Mm-hmm. One was an Egyptian startup. We talked about the
we
story.
Did talk about
yeah, but we talked about it like 1 month ago, so I forgot the name. But so Pepsi is not trying like directly sales, they're mm-hmm. trying to keep their name afloat in the market through different strategies. So they're sponsoring something, they're doing mm-hmm. something here and there, just trying to keep their brand alive.
Yeah, so it remains to be seen how long the boycotts will last and whether these consumer shifts will become permanent, potentially reshaping the beverage market landscape in the MENA region. Let's move on to our second story. So Saudi Central Bank partners with Samsung to launch Samsung Pay in the kingdom. Now, we have talked also about Samsung partnering with
Samsung Pay coming to Oman. They partnered with the company there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And people in Oman can now use Samsung Pay. And the same goes for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So the Saudi Central Bank signed an agreement with Samsung to launch Samsung Pay across Saudi Arabia by the last quarter of this year. And it was formalized during the 24 FinTech 2024 conference, which we'll talk about the next story, in Riyadh. And the service will allow users to store and manage their digital payment cards through the Samsung Wallet app. So it's basically like Apple Wallet for Samsung. Yeah, so same thing.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it's a very short and cute story. A lot of stories came out of 24 FinTech, the story that we're going to talk about in the end. The event concluded on Thursday. It was a three-day event in Saudi Arabia. So Samsung Pay services will allow users to store and manage. Hind has already said that. The initiative aligns with the Financial Sector Development Program objectives under Saudi Vision 2030. It's mm-hmm. always, whatever we see is happening in Saudi Arabia, the good things, they're always linked to the Saudi Vision 2030.
We don't even have to say Saudi Vision. Like, if you hear Saudi,
knows.
That's what we refer to.
So they're aiming to enhance the kingdom's digital payment infrastructure. It represents a key step in Saudi Central Bank's strategy to promote the use of fintech solutions, thereby fostering financial inclusion in Saudi Arabia. Actually, one of the things that I read in the morning was that Saudi has scrapped hotel licensing fee in bid to boost tourism as well. So the licensing fee for opening a hotel, they've removed it. So mm-hmm. now you can open a hotel mm-hmm. and you can boost tourism. So yeah, cool. Linking it to Saudi Arabia and digital mm-hmm. payments. This is one of the stories that came out in the morning. So a lot of things are happening in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. It's not just Samsung Pay or hotels or anything.
Yeah.
Everything is nearly now happening in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. The gaming industry is booming. NEOM is there. They're building it. Qiddiya, the entertainment hub, is doing something.
Even in sports.
Yeah. Even in sports, the Saudi Pro League. Yeah, one of the stories we are supposed to talk about at the end. Ivan Tooney, it's a very small, very basic story. that Ivan Toney, he moved to Saudi Pro League for Al Ahli club, and there he's getting £400,000 per week pay. Very much, a lot of money. But with bonuses and everything, he will move to nearly £500,000 a week if he was to play in the Premier League in the UK or any league in the UK. He would have to get a salary of 1 million, which after tax would give him like hand in money of 400,000 or 500,000. So nearly half of his salary would have gone to taxes. But in Saudi Arabia, since there's taxes, but there's very minimal taxes. And sometimes on income tax, there is no tax. So on income, there is no tax. So he will earn the same amount. So Saudis are paying him less amount and he is getting the same amount. The Premier League club would have paid him more and his price tag would have been more. So it's very interesting that even in sports, these taxes are working. Because whenever we talk about Middle East, everyone says, oh, no tax, no tax, go there,
there
no
still
tax.
Is tax, but it's not as high compared to other countries.
Recently, we talked about Bahrain announcing a 15% tax. But again, that was a very big amount, like 750 million euros. And then you'll get taxed 15%. It's not like a small amount. So not everyone will get taxed.
So let's move on to our final story. FinTech, 24 FinTech in Saudi Arabia attracts nearly 37,000 visitors, making history as the largest FinTech event debut. The inaugural 24 FinTech event has set a new benchmark as the world's largest debut for a FinTech exhibition with 36,959 attendees over 3 days.
So the whole region, the whole event occupied nearly 40,000 square meters of event space. A lot of space for an event. And the event
there were a lot of people.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. Like, it was full. It was a great event. The good thing was there was a lot of announcements happening at the event. It was not just like, oh, something happened. Someone said something. There was a panel discussion. A lot of startups announced their acquisitions. Yesterday, we talked about Tarabut. They acquired Wine, a UK startup. Then Angami. We did one more story, which was announced there. So all these things, they happened because of one event. It was a big event. There were like 300 brands who were the 350 sector investors. So it shows, again, Saudi Arabia's ambitious plans to become a global fintech hub.
Okay, so the event also marked the conclusion of the first ever Fintech Forge pitch competition, which saw 24 startups compete for a share of $250,000 a prize pool. And the Saudi-based startup Ijari, a rent now pay later service, won the top prize of $100,000. And the CEO of Ijari said that this award is a testament to our team's dedication and will fuel our growth and customer acquisition. So it's great that a startup that's rent now pay later is winning. We've been talking about buy now, pay later
for the last 2-3 days. And now there's something rent now, pay later. There's a small thing. Ijari, a lot of people who are listening and are in the UAE, they would understand there is already an Ijari in Dubai. It's a contract between the landlord, the tenant, and the government. So government comes in as a part of the contract between them. So that Ijari contract you have to get if you want to get a home here. But Saudi fintech-based startup is very different. In Saudi Arabia, if you want to rent a house, usually you pay a six-month rent or the full year. And mostly it's the full year. So what they did was they went in there. They're like, okay, you can't pay the full rent. No problem. We'll pay the rent for the whole year. And you can stay in the house and you can pay a monthly rent. So they bypassed the laws. They created an environment. They created a product which helps the consumers, obviously. So people are staying there. And the good part, we were discussing it, that sometimes it happens that, oh, after like 6 months, 7 months, you're staying in the house. You got it. You're planning to stay there long, but you lose your job or anything happens.
And you have to leave
early. You have to leave. So the good thing is that Ijari always has people on their list and they can always give the house for the next 5 months to someone else. So the landlord is happy, the tenants are happy, everyone is happy.
Everybody's
happy. It's a good, very good service.
24 fintech in Saudi Arabia was very, very eventful. We saw a lot of news coming out of it. So that's it for our main top stories. Should we get into the footballer?
Yeah, we've talked about him already.
All right,
but
then,
yeah, that's like it. The summary is very simple. We talked about Pavel Durov. He's published his very first statement after getting arrested. And the crux of his statement is that these are medieval laws on the basis of which mm-hmm. he's been arrested. He says that Telegram is doing its best to make the platform safe for everyone and without compromising on privacy of the users. Then we talked about how local sodas have already beaten Pepsi and Cola. They've gathered nearly 20.5% of the market and they're growing in the Middle East and in the Muslim majority countries. Lastly, we also talked about how Samsung Pay is coming to Saudi Arabia after they came to Oman. So all these Middle Eastern countries are very focused on bringing all the digital payment solutions that they can. So this is the summary for today.
If you missed the first half of the show, you can always catch us on all these streaming platforms like Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can also find us on TikTok, Instagram, X, Facebook, and YouTube. We also have a daily newsletter. Thank you so much for joining us on the Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Media Podcast Network.